Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Brock knows how to play.
Very conscientious, works extremely hard. He's gained a lot of respect in the locker room because of the way he prepares. He did a good job today, and obviously it was his first opportunity with those guys, so we just need to keep fine-tuning some things. It's not over yet, but I love to see him go play well on Thursday night and lead the team and run our offense to the best of his ability. I was going to put everything into the equation, and I just felt like at this time, this was the best opportunity for us.
Coach sat down with all of us quarterbacks, talked to us all at the same time. He told all of us how the rotation was going to go Thursday night, and then we came out here and we had a great walkthrough. You know, my biggest deal, like I told you guys from the get-go, is just trying to be a consistent quarterback and get better every single day. You know, don't make the same mistake twice. The key is to make the most of whatever snaps you get. Whether it's 5 plays, 15 plays, 25 plays, 50 plays, it's always making the most of that play. And when that play is done, put it behind you and make the most of the next play.
Come here to help and, you know, get back into football. We'll kind of see how it goes. A situation like this, I mean, just doesn't come along very often. I mean, I know Adam very well. I've known him since 06, the first year I came out. I know the system. You know, you're talking about a playoff team. Really, really good football players, a lot of potential. So there weren't a lot of opportunities or jobs out there. If they would have came up, I would have taken. This has got to be the top of the list.
I think it really was a struggle for him to come to this conclusion because, as I said, I think he was content having retired. Jay's not a legacy type of guy. That's just his personality. He's not a pleaser. He's not worried about what other people think about him, and he's not a legacy guy. I don't doubt his dedication to this endeavor. While I thought he was excited initially about this opportunity, then I think he thought about it and then realized that, you know, retirement's not so bad. He had made over $100 million. He'd had a number of injuries, and he said today, meeting the media, that his wife, Kristen, played a big role in that.
When pursuing a championship, you're either all the way in or you're all the way out. There's no in between. So this is a situation where if they know they're going to be better off apart, they need to get there and get there as quickly as they can. I think this is a guy who wants to know how good he can be. LeBron cast a very large shadow over an organization, and most of it is really, really positive. I mean, you know you're expected to win a championship by way of example. But what that doesn't always allow is for a player like Kyrie to test his boundaries a little bit and see how good he can really be. And can I actually be the front man of a team like that? He just wanted to put himself in a position, I think, where he could find out exactly what he has as a 25-year-old entering his prime. What Ron was saying is really unfair to Kyrie. I don't think this is youth and ignorance. This is a guy who handled this situation exactly like he was supposed to. He went to Dan Gilbert privately, told him that he thought he would be happier somewhere else. The absolute worst thing this guy could have done was pretend to be all in and sink the ship from within. That's not youth and ignorance. That's a little bit more courage than people give him credit for.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
How about all of that? Wow, what a montage. What a great myriad of topics that we have to talk about this afternoon right here on the Extravaganza. Thank you so much for joining us as we begin at 11 minutes after 3. We are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, and we are Toledo's sports leader. Great Tuesday afternoon. Really have a lot of things to talk about. You just heard a wonderful array from Hugh Jackson, the coach of the Browns. Brock Osweiler has been named the starter for preseason game number one for them. Then, of course, a guy who's in a lot more of the limelight right now than Brock Osweiler, playing in lowly Cleveland. It's Jay Cutler, who's supposed to take over as the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, a playoff team from a year ago, introduced to the media yesterday, immediately made fun of, and the target and the subject of many social media memes simply for his appearance and his body language and his demeanor at his opening press conference. And, of course, because some people are still mad that he got the job in Miami instead of Colin Kaepernick. So interesting stuff there. You also heard from Tom Waddle on that story. Then David Griffin on the ongoing. We haven't talked in several days on this program about the ongoing NBA story. Really, there's only one NBA story going on in this offseason part right now. You know, we complimented the NBA for really commanding a lot of the spotlight even after the finals ended. there's not really much going on in the NBA right now except for the question of whether or not the Cavaliers will indeed trade Kyrie Irving away from LeBron James as he wishes, or whether or not they're going to stick together and force Kyrie just to come to camp and come to practice and do his thing starting in the late fall. Really interesting comments by former Cavalier and former Bull world champion Ron Harper, followed by what you heard there, and that was David Griffin, the former Cavaliers GM, saying, yeah, I think they're going to trade him, and I think they're going to have to. And by the way, Kyrie is not the bad guy here. I found that very, very interesting, especially considering so many people want to paint Kyrie Irving as the bad guy. He's the guy who's walking out on LeBron James. How can you walk away from the best player in the world? All of that sort of thing. And LeBron, remember, vocally came out in support of David Griffin after Griffin was not retained or offered a new contract worth anything by Dan Gilbert. It was LeBron James who was very supportive vocally of David Griffin and, in fact, expressed a little bit of discontent, some might say anger, for Dan Gilbert not retaining the services of that general manager that LeBron really liked. Well, it's interesting that here comes that general manager weighing in on the Kyrie Irving-LeBron James beef. And I don't want to say siding with Kyrie, but he didn't exactly condemn Kyrie in defense of LeBron James the way so many other people have, which I think is really, really interesting. So we're going to get into as many of those stories as we can today. Coming up at the top of hour number two, Ryan Van Bibber is going to join us. He is with the SBNation.com NFL editor. We're going to talk to him about some of these NFL stories going on right now as we get ready for the first games. Obviously, we had the Hall of Fame game, but first games for everybody else. In training camp, we'll talk about Brock Osweiler. As a matter of fact, we can start there. Let me throw a few other things at you, by the way, that were not in the montage that I find very interesting to discuss today. A lot of them are NFL-related. Some of them are going to dip down into the college ranks. Josh Rosen He really, really grabbed my attention. You know who Josh Rosen is. All-American quarterback, one of the top prospects to probably come out into the draft next April out of UCLA. Very, very high, how do I want to phrase this? I don't want to just say well-spoken because he's out there. He is just out there. He's a very vocal guy who likes to be heard. He doesn't mind the controversy, and he's got very, very strong opinions. He has a very strong opinion of himself and the job of college football players. Josh Rosen said that football and school just don't go together. Mind you, this is not some underachiever. This is a very, very sharp dude, a very smart guy who has been very vocal about wanting college football players to be paid some of the millions and millions of dollars that the schools take in based on their play. He has taken on the system before in that regard. Now he's taking on just the idea of making guys go to classes when they're only there to play football. If that sounds familiar to you, it should. Because it was former Buckeyes national championship-winning quarterback back when he was just freshman third or fourth on the depth chart quarterback, Cardale Jones, who once infamously tweeted a few years back, "Man, we didn't come here to play. We came here to play football. We didn't come here to play school." I'm paraphrasing it, of course. I don't have it all memorized. "We didn't come here for school. We came here for football." That's it. Josh Rosen says football and school don't go together. But he did more than just complain about the schedule that football players have to keep at Division I universities with their scholarships, things that they are required to do that take away time from studying, and studying that takes away time from football. He didn't just complain about the general atmosphere created on college campuses. Josh Rosen, quarterback at UCLA, took a shot at Alabama. Nick Saban's team has won 4 out of the last 8 national championships. Josh Rosen said, "You want to stop that? Raise the SAT requirement." That is a blast. A shot across the bow doesn't even begin to describe it. Raise the SAT requirement at Alabama and let's see how things go. Is he really saying that Alabama is just stock full of dummies who can't read and write and and do college work or high school work, for that matter, based on SAT scores being lower there?
It seems like it. The exact full quote for posterity's sake, okay, is, quote, okay, raise the SAT requirement in Alabama and see what kind of team they have. You lose athletes, and then the product on the field suffers, end quote.
So this is a guy who, again, he's a very sharp guy. Josh Rosen is a very sharp guy. This isn't somebody who's like, man, I don't want to have to go to class. He is an economics major, entering his junior year at UCLA. And as an economics major, he pretty much has his mind fixated on money. And he has said many times, particularly when the latest contract, the UCLA announced its latest contract, a 15-year, $280 million deal with Under Armour. When UCLA announced that last year, Rosen used that news to mock the NCAA status as a, quote, nonprofit, end quote, organization. He went on social media and said, we're still amateurs, though. Gotta love nonprofits. Hashtag NCAA. As UCLA got $280 mil from Under Armour for a 15-year contract to supply their clothing, gear, merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a guy who's a sharp dude, smart dude, who says this is wrong to make us do that. He took the shot at Bama, but the larger, that's just the personal shot. I don't know why he picked Bama. He could have picked probably any other school or a number of other schools. Maybe because they're the big king dog, even though they lost the NCAA championship game to Clemson, they're still four out of the last eight, so maybe that's why he picked them. But I'll tell you what, his larger picture is something that is going to get a lot of discussion. His larger, you know, his big picture explanation or his big picture complaint about football in school. I'm going to talk about that as we go a little bit more this afternoon. A couple of other stories to get into today. This is one of those ones where I'm a little bit hesitant to even want to bring up, because whenever my sport gets attacked, my favorite sport is football, in case you don't listen to this show. If you're new, you realize, or you will come to realize, football is where I kind of start and oftentimes end. I love my basketball and my baseball, too, and I love boxing and UFC, fighting sports, a little bit of tennis now and again, a little bit of golf now and again, too. But I love football first and foremost, and when football comes under attack, as it has, I like to rise up to defend it. And we're talking about CTE, and we're talking about head trauma, and we're talking about concussions, and how sadly the proliferation of you know, those studies indicate former pro football players have a propensity for that kind of brain trauma. It's leading to a lot of people not allowing their kids to play football. In fact, some former pro players saying they don't want their own kids playing the game that they played. I always have a good answer for those things. I really do, because I've got the numbers on my side. I've got the number, the millions of young kids who play football at the grade school level, and how that number levels off, or I should say shrinks, and gets smaller at the junior high level, and how that number shrinks even further when it comes to kids who play football in high school, and when that number shrinks even further to those who are able to go on to college, and that number, of course, drops off the table when it comes to the NFL. In other words, there's nothing wrong with playing the game at a younger level. Very few people in the world are going to go all the way to play in the NFL level, at which time they can evaluate whether or not they think the game is too dangerous for their brain and for long-term trauma, that sort of thing, right? But this story I read earlier today was about beyond, more than just brain trauma. It was about a lot more than just CTE and this sort of thing. There was an article, a feature story on former Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl champion, Jim Plunkett. He won two titles with the Oakland Raiders, or L.A. Raiders. And big article in the San Jose Mercury News, headlined, "My Life Sucks." Wait, what? Jim Plunkett's painful journey. My life sucks. Subheadline, Super Bowl winning quarterback from San Jose, which is where he's from, faces constant pain and an uncertain future. He went on to say, did the 69-year-old Plunkett, that, quote, it's no fun being in this body right now. Everything hurts. He's 69 years old. And I got to tell you, I really just don't have as many answers for the body erosion that comes from playing a violent sport for a long time. Plunkett played 15 years, by the way, led, as I said, the Raiders to two Super Bowl championships. Here's a little rundown. If you keep, here's his stat line. And I'm not talking about completions and attempts and yards and touchdowns and interceptions. Listen to this stat line. Jim Plunkett has an artificial knee. No, correction. Two. Put the two in that column of the stat line. Two artificial knees. One artificial shoulder. A surgically repaired back. He is a veteran of 18 operations. 18 different operations on various parts of his body just to relieve pain and pressure and stress on joints and bones and ligaments that were just completely destroyed from 15 years of NFL football. And, of course, we have to say, plus 4 years of college football, 4 years of high school football. And that's why those stories always, to me, are a little bit over-exaggerated when we talk about, you know, oh, look how dangerous it is. Look at all the pro football. Well, there's a lot of guys who are going to suffer from many of those things because of the accumulative effect of hits taken. You know, if you played, let's say, 4 years of grade school slash middle school football, and then another four of high school, and then another four of college, then 15 in the NFL like Jim Plunkett, you play for 27 years. 27 years of a contact sport. It's going to take a toll. I didn't play anywhere near that long because I didn't go to the NFL. But in all my years going through college, I've got a torn rotator cuff in my left shoulder. I've got two bad knees that have some bone-on-bone issues where I can't run and jump. I can only do really fast walking if I want to try to do some exercise. And I've got a really, really bad back from my years as well. Now, fortunately, unless you ask my wife, I don't have any brain damage. Ask my wife, she might tell you otherwise, any of those sorts of things. But I know on my little tiny itsy-bitsy small scale how much of a toll. Oh, my God, you could almost hear that on live radio. I literally just lifted up my shoulder, and the rotator cuff shoulder just cracked so loud, I swear it almost went over the radio. My teeny tiny itsy bitsy little battle scars from playing a teeny tiny fraction of the type of a career that a lot of these other guys play indicate to me that what they are suffering has to be extraordinary. But I would also tell you, in all seriousness, again, it's not apples to apples. It's apples to, I don't know, something really, really small, or really, you know, a seed. How about that? My quote-unquote career is an apple seed compared to an apple like the one that Jim Plunkett's career would represent. All of the pain that I feel, because my wife asks me from time to time, because I've got a 14-year-old son who's going to be a freshman in high school playing high school football. He wants to play as long as he can. He's a good-sized kid. He probably will be able to play. Well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, she asked me, you know, I mean, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Is it worth it? You know, I'm in pain from time to time. Oh, yeah, I just got bad knees. I can't get out on my knees and clean that up. Will you get it? Because my knees hurt. And she'll even say something to me like, but at least you got to play football, kind of mockingly, you know. And I always answer the same way. I would never trade 1 second of it in for any of the pain that I feel now, even in my mid to late, well, let's just say middle age. You don't need to know my age. You understand the point. I would not trade in 1 second of it. And I would bet if you ask guys like Jim Plunkett, who said, my life sucks now, he would tell you the same thing. Despite the fact that he, you know, has this pain now, he revels in everything that he did. Revels in it. Began his football career back in the 1960s in East San Jose, California, and obviously played into the 1980s with the Raiders winning two championships. And he still goes to autograph signings. He still goes to league reunions and other sorts of charitable events and so on. And he smiles and he signs and he loves being known as Jim Plunkett, the Super Bowl champion quarterback. But when he comes home, his wife says, that's when he kind of lets it all out. Oh, my God, that hurts so much to do those things. But he loves what he did. Now, the other side of that, of course, is the questions about degenerative brain disease. Jim Plunkett says he doesn't have any of that at this particular point in time, but we know that other guys do. Hank Bauer, who was a former Chargers running back who played mostly special teams, known for his reckless play on special teams. We've all seen, you know, well, at least every team has at least one of those guys, just nuts, going down there to be the wedge buster on kickoff coverage, that sort of thing. Hank Bauer said, think of getting in 50 car wrecks a week for 20 straight weeks every year. That's what happens to our bodies. He said, everybody hurts at our age. We just hurt a little bit more. But yet, none of them are saying you shouldn't do this. This is just the price of greatness. It's a bill that comes due later in life. You collect all of the rewards, you collect all of the salary, you get the fame, you get the glory, and the bill comes due later on in life, and it's there. I just found it to be a fascinating story. Maybe you can tweet it out from Sports Radio 106.5. I don't have any, like I said, way to say, no, don't let your son play football. You know, the way some people do with these kinds of things. This isn't one of those stories. It's going to hurt. I'm not going to predict brain damage for your kid, and I'm not going to predict all of this sort of physical damage for your kid, because I can pretty much assure you with the guarantee of my mortgage on this statement, your kid isn't going to the NFL. All right? It is such a tiny fraction of 1% of high school players who go on to college and then the NFL. Tiny fraction, I can pretty much say for sure. Now, unless Mr. Kaiser is listening, Deshaun Kaiser or Kareem Hunt's family or Michael Roberts' family or anybody else who's, you know, from the Toledo area originally or from the, you know, Toledo or Bowling Green products, you understand people do go, but you understand the point here. It's very, very unlikely that your kid is going to the NFL, but it's just one of those fascinating stories that I really think we can talk about. And if you played high school football, particularly if you played into college the way I did at the small college level, any regrets at all from any of the pains and any of the aches and any of that stuff that you suffer? Would you turn your kids away from it because of that now? Jim Plunkett says, my life sucks. But you know what? I guarantee he would never trade it in for anything. I guarantee he would not go back and say, I didn't want to win a Heisman Trophy. And I didn't want to win two Super Bowl championships. I didn't want to live the fame and the glory. He would tell you, absolutely, I wanted to live it, and I would want to do it again. All right, so we got that story. And speaking of old guys, Barry Bonds, on the 10-year anniversary of his home run record, is expressing some regret. We'll tell you about what. Going to talk a little bit about regret. Speaking of regret, terrible story. And since we're talking about MAC football, at least in passing there, talking about Toledo BG, Kent State in a world of trouble when it comes to their strength coach, the strength coach who was overseeing the conditioning drills the day that a freshman died of complications from an abnormally high body temperature a little bit earlier this summer / the end of spring. So we're going to talk about that story as well. Spike Lee is planning a rally for Colin Kaepernick in New York City. I've got some thoughts on that. And Jay Cutler was introduced to the Miami media as the newest member of the Dolphins. We got some on that, too. Along with, as I mentioned, Kyrie Irving and Ron Harper and David Griffin all weighing in on the Irving request for a trade. So we're going to get into all of those things coming up in just a bit right here on the Extravaganza. But for now, it's time to give you that stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
Jim Cushlin, and before I give the Wild Stat of the Day, can you confirm, is this, at this stage, truly the worst offensive season of Miguel Cabrera's career?
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
It's confirmed then. Okay, because, I mean, I know it's pacing and that sort of thing, but the Wild Stat of the Day is a wildly crappy stat of the day for Tigers fans and for fans of Miguel Cabrera. His statistical season on the road is just something he'll want to forget about once his season ends. On the current road trip that ends tonight, Miguel Cabrera is 4 for 23. That's a 174 average. He has just two RBIs on this trip. For the season, it ain't a whole lot better. Miguel Cabrera on the road hitting .211 away from Comerica Park with just three home runs and 23 RBIs. A far cry from the man who once won, it seems like not too terribly long ago, the Triple Crown, and was being lauded as perhaps one of the greatest right-handed hitters, not only in the modern era, but in the history of the game. Now, this season, of course, wouldn't change all of that. He still will be regarded as such, but boy, it's hard to watch Miggy's struggles this season, particularly away from home. So there you go. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We got a sweet deal we're going to give away a little bit later on. Speaking, it's UT-related, by the way, if you're a Rocket fan. Got a sweet deal we're going to be giving away. And we got a good conversation with an NFL editor at SB Nation coming up at about 4:10 as well. And a lot of time for your calls. 866-240-1065, the number to jump in right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed, that's who we are. That's what we are. 866-240-1065, the number to join us, 866-240-1065. We'll get you up and on the radio. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Sports Radio 1065 if you like. You can also comment on some of the stories we discuss at our Facebook page, which is 1065 The Ticket. Yeah, the Kent State story is a very disturbing one. Since we were just kind of laying out the Jim Plunkett long-term injury type thing, this is the this is obviously the worst case scenario for any young athlete, for anybody, period, and that is, of course, dying in the course of playing your sport. And there's a problem at Kent State, and the problem is a certification one. Kent State cannot produce certification for the strength coach who was in charge when a young Kent State football player, freshman Tyler Heinz, passed away of complications from an abnormally high body temperature. This according to CBS Sports. They cannot produce any professional certification as required by the NCAA for the head strength coach who oversaw conditioning. In fact, Golden Flash's strength coach, Ross Bowser, beginning his second year with the program, seems to be the only member of the strength and conditioning and training staff without certification, and yet he's in charge of it. If Bowser is not certified, it would be a violation of NCAA bylaw 11.1.5, which states that strength coaches must maintain current certification through a nationally accredited strength and conditioning certification program. A Kent State spokesman told CBS Sports there were no responsive records to the Freedom of Information Act request for copies of his certification. Also, two of the nation's largest strength and conditioning organizations told CBS Sports they couldn't find any for this particular coach. Bowser was responsible at the time for the supervised drills on June 13, when the 19-year-old freshman, Heinz, collapsed during the second day of conditioning. The preliminary cause of death by a local coroner was hyperthermia, a condition that develops when a body is unable to properly cool itself. Obviously, the opposite of hypothermia, which is when you are too cold. An official cause of death will take at least 6 more weeks, according to the Portage County, Ohio coroner's office. Spokesman for the office told CBS Sports that hyperthermia is more than heat exhaustion. CBS contacted Kent State's AD Joel Nielsen for a comment, and a university spokesman responded with the following statement. We continue to mourn the loss of Tyler Heinz, and the Kent State family is focused on joining with the Heinz family in honoring the memory of Tyler in our thoughts and actions. Kent State University continues to assess and review all policies and practices relative to the circumstances surrounding Tyler's death. It's premature to report the totality of our findings, but we remain steadfast in the due diligence of our review and our commitment to the safety and well-being of student athletes at Kent State. So, it would be irresponsible to say that Kent State's strength coach, because he didn't have a certificate, is liable for the death of this young man. If he would have had a certificate, boy, then he probably would have stopped the drills in time and could have saved this young man from having the hyperthermia condition happen to him. Nobody is saying that. I am certainly not saying that. But what I am saying is this just got a lot more serious for Kent State University. And I feel terrible for them. I feel terrible for the strength coach. I have to believe outside of Tyler Heinz's immediate family, nobody feels worse than the strength coach. Because if his job, part of his job, is to maintain the well-being of the athletes while they train and while they study, et cetera, and while they work, while they condition, and one of those athletes loses his life, kind of quote-unquote under your watch, I cannot even imagine how difficult this is for Ross Bowser. And I think it would be irresponsible to suggest, had he had a certificate or one that is officially on file, maybe he has one and just nobody knows where it is. But I think it would be irresponsible to say that this would not have happened. And it's also not really responsible at this point to speculate that it didn't or that it did happen as a result of anything that the strength and conditioning coach was putting this young man through. Who knows if he had been jogging on his own or doing wind sprints during summer conditioning on his own. I always used to work probably harder in the summertime than I did when camp started. Why? When I was in school. Why? Because I wanted camp to be easier. I wanted to be in the best possible shape coming in. Obvious. No secret there. So, it's just a tragic situation all the way around for everybody. But Kent State right now is in the middle of the probe. They're conducting their own investigation, but they're obviously the subject of the probe, by state authorities as well as the NCAA as well. Okay, Jimmy in Toledo. You can count on him like clockwork to be waiting for us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Jimmy, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, man? I had a few things real quick. Hey, Spike Lee, do the right thing. Shut up. Go away. Go away.
Hold on. Second straight day you get one of these.
I've about had enough of
your right thing.
Damn.
Shut up. I might have to steal that and put it on Twitter, by the way.
Do the right thing and shut up. Yes, it's about time. I've had enough of him and Sam Jackson, and it's bad enough now I got to see him in Capital One commercials, you know? Talk about double.
I don't think there's ever been a camera that Sam Jackson will not stand in front of for money.
Man.
By the way, I like him. I do. I pretty much almost ever, even Snakes on a Plane, as stupid and cheesy as it was, I like Sam Jackson. He kind of epitomizes cool on screen. So,
He did for me. He was Jules, and that was a great role. But I mean, he's just I just call them the Race Bader brothers, man.
I even like him as Nick Fury, man, in the Avengers movies.
I'm not really down with the cartoon stuff, but that's
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm a superhero fan. I like superhero movies, and I love.
And that's cool. I mean, you know, he's kind of a cartoon guy. I gotcha. I mean, but anyways, I digress. Miguel, man, it's just heartbreaking because I know, you know, part of me.
Yeah, Miguel regresses. Miguel regresses.
Yeah, well, and I think it's a couple things going on. I'm not going to make excuses for him. He's still one of the best right-handed hitters in the history of the game, no question about it. I don't think it's an erosion in his skills because it's been a major drop-off. And I think I've commented on it before. I think a lot of it's going on with what's going on in his home country. And I did read an article about him getting death threats, and not only that, but threats against his mother's life and possible kidnapping of her and other family members. So he's got a lot on his mind. And when I watch him at the plate, he's got like a photographic memory, and they say he remembers, and this is true of a lot of hitters, but especially him. He studies and he knows what they're trying to do with them. And I just see a lot of at bats where he's lacked focus, and it's been consistent throughout the year. And there's just something missing, and that would go a long ways, I think, to explaining some of his struggles this year. And also, we have to remember, they had that stupid World Baseball Classic, of which he was a major player in. And he's not getting any younger. And I just think maybe sometimes you just play all that damn baseball, and it's a little too much for him this year with all that's on the plate. I would like to hope that's what's, you know, those two factors played.
You know, despite also, guys, his stats being where they are this year, and that's why I threw that out there as the wild stat when I read how horrid his road numbers were on this trip and the season, because, you know, it was just 2 years ago he won a batting title, still at over 338 homers, 108 RBIs last year. But Jimmy, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I've heard little pieces this year, last year, and even a teensy bit in 2015, Miguel Cabrera, his back's acting up on him. I wonder if that has something to do with all this, too.
Yeah, but you know what? For a guy, if he were breaking down physically, he would have spent more time in the DL, and you can't keep him out of the lineup.
No, that's true. 119 games in 2015 and 87 in his rookie year are his lowest, too. He's always at 150-plus.
Yeah, so, I mean, I could buy that. If you were breaking down, I think you'd see more him sitting more, and Brad Ausmus would, you know, who I'm not thrilled with as a manager. I don't think he's bad. I just think they gave the keys to the Cadillac to a guy that had never managed before, and that was a massive mistake. But yeah, I think Miggy'll be back. I think he just needs a good long rest, and I just think a lot of what's going on in Venezuela, I mean, it's ridiculous. They got death squads going on.
Oh yeah,
you know. And
it's terrible. Those people are living under extraordinary oppression. The government there is out of control, and you can see why it would weigh on his mind. Even if he has any friends of friends, let alone family, and I don't know what he's got back there. But you let me out for this, guys. While it's certainly fair to examine all of those things, the back, the mental focus because of the home thing or the home country thing, the World Baseball Classic, what if it's just this is a slump year? And I'll point to Bryce Harper, who's having a monster year this year, who had a monster year 2 years ago, who had a bad year last year. I mean, 2 years ago, he's the MVP. He hit 330 with 42 home runs and 99 driven in. This year he's hitting 327 with 29 and 82 already. It was still a month and three quarters to go. What, about 7 weeks to go? Last year he hit 240, 243 to be precise, with only 24 and 86 and in 147 games. What if you just, you know, it happens. The Bryce Harper's a future Hall of Famer based on his young career trajectory. Miggy is a surefire Hall of Famer. Sometimes it just happens. Sometimes you don't find the holes. Sometimes it starts to weigh you down. You're on a losing team. You're not in a pennant race. You're not as focused and as sharp as maybe you would be if this at bat meant something a little bit more in the standings. And those kind of things happen to guys.
I might buy that if he didn't have, like, 15 years of rolling out of the rack and hitting well above 300 and just, you know, hitting 30 or 40 bombs and, well, you know, 100 RBI.
This is where I'm leaning towards you a little bit, Jimmy, because the drop-off in his numbers for this year are just so stark, relatively speaking. I mean, this will be the first year, if it holds true, since 04, his first full season. He had 87 games rookie year in 03. His first full season in 04, he batted 294. He's hit over 300 every year since.
No, well, you gotta go to 08, actually. 292.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. There's a 292 with Detroit. But he led the league in homers and drove it 127.
Yeah, I know.
Neither
but
which
just,
are happening
just
either.
For the sake of clarity.
True.
It was
fair
292
enough.
That year. And you're right. He's been, you know, he's been a consistent over 300 guy with, you know, good power numbers pretty much every year. So there's no doubt. I'm just saying it. Sometimes it can happen. And what is he, 34 years old?
34.
You know, you wonder, it happens to guys starting about now. Only Barry Bonds turned 35, 6, 7, 8, and 9 and started hitting with more power and more production than he ever had in the rest of his career. For everybody else, it starts to drop off after about this age. And maybe, just maybe, the bat speed that you and I couldn't notice with our naked eye, maybe the bat speed is slowed just a mile an hour or so less, and I don't know how they measure that as far as, you know, bat speed. But, you know, maybe those kinds of things are just starting to happen at the age of 34 for a guy like Miggy.
I've seen Miggy go up there too many times, and Miggy, and I'm no professional baseball player, and I don't claim to play one on TV, but I don't think he's been as selective with this, with what he goes up there and sits on. I've just seen him go out of the strike zone for pitches way more than he would normally go up. And I know they're working him inside a lot more. And they always say, obviously, like you kind of alluded to, you start to not be able to turn on the baseball as well. And they've been breaking him off inside a lot this year, going up and in. But I've just seen Miggy go after a lot of pitches that he just normally, he's just so disciplined and his approach just hasn't been as disciplined, and I'm telling you, there's probably statistics that would bear that out, and that would just show me a lack of the supreme focus that he would normally have, and that would just be explained by what's going on. You know, I think the guy's just thoroughly worn out and fatigued mentally with all the drama that's going on in Venezuela.
Yeah, it very well may be. And you know what? Here's the question, because he doesn't speak English, right? Or at least not very well.
No, he does. He speaks English, but he? You know,
he doesn't do many interviews then.
No, but he doesn't have like the, you know, he's not going to
open up
English,
to somebody in a sit down one on one thing.
Right. And you know, a lot of the Latin guys, they don't like to do media, so they speak English. A lot of the Latin guys don't like to do the media, and they speak English a little better when they're in more comfortable circumstances.
Yeah.
So they're
kind of
selective about it.
Did you see?
After he hits a home run and they're joshing around on the field, and, you know, he speaks a little better than he does, if, you know, in other circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no,
anyway.
Of course. Yeah, I'm trying to remember who it was. Cushman, there was an Indians pitcher I cannot remember. He suddenly spoke really good English after a good start, and after a bad start, he just didn't want to speak very much at all.
What time period are we talking here?
Oh, that's the guy that threw those cannonballs.
What's that?
That guy that threw those cannonballs that had the fake name from Cuba, and that. The guy had that terrible sinker, just killed everybody with it. Didn't he have a false name?
Oh, you mean Ubaldo Jimenez?
No. Like, who's the guy who came up? Wasn't he from Cuba or something? And he's like a two-year wonder. And then
that isn't what I was thinking of. I can't remember who it was, but he basically, when he was doing well, he found a way to speak, you know, we kind of fake used the translator, but he knew what he was doing. And then other times it's like, you know, I no hablo inglés.
Yeah, he's here illegally, I think. What was the guy? He got in some trouble.
Fausto Carmona, Roberto Hernandez.
That was the guy. He could speak real well, and then remember when he got in that immigration hassle, and all of a sudden he couldn't speak at all.
Yeah, you know, that is not who I was thinking of, but you're right. That did happen with him, and so that's a good.
All right, fellas, listen, man. I got to get back to work. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Roberto Heredia Hernandez,
right,
formerly known as Fausto Carmona, who is now 36 years of age and is indeed a free agent. Just to real quick, I want to pull him up here. Yeah, he was arrested and accused of using false identification to obtain a U.S. visa back in 2012. And, of course, he was a lot older, as it turns out, than what the fake identity that he used was.
Right.
So it was one of those weird things. This poor dude, if you recall, was one of the best arms. He finished fourth in the Cy Young voting the year C.C. Sabathia won it, I believe.
Yeah, that was 07, the playoff year.
And was just simply filthy. That sinker that he was talking about that nobody could touch, I remember, I believe it was Torrey Hunter, who was still an all-star then, and I believe he was with the Twins.
He would have still been with the Twins at that time, yep.
Yeah, and Torrey Hunter was just on the record saying, man, that dude is unhittable when that thing drops. And he was so complimentary of how good Fausto Carmona was, and I thought, man. You know, that's when everybody, of course, if you're rooting for the Indians over there, you know, you're a C.C. Sabathia, Fausto Carmona, Cliff Lea. I mean, oh, my God, it's a murderer's row of pitchers, you know. And obviously we know what happened. Two Cy Young winners, one fourth-place finish out of Carmona, and the two winners are traded, and Carmona becomes Roberto Hernandez and falls off a cliff and is now out of baseball.
The last thing I will say on the whole Miguel Cabrera part of it is, let's put it this way.
Yeah.
For all the things we're trying to figure out why, I'll say this, and I'm sure a lot of Tigers fans agree with this. If we're having to have this same type of discussion, say, Memorial Day 2018, then we got a real problem here.
Well, then it just might be that drop-off that I was talking about.
Which means, oh, gosh, and they have to pay him, what was it, almost $30 million a year until, like, 2021?
Yeah, I mean, when Ken Griffey Jr., who's maybe one of the greatest left-handed hitters we've ever seen, just to kind of compare him to Miguel for whatever reason, you know, he went to, I'm trying to figure out exactly what age he was. I think he was 28 or so, 29 when he went to Cincinnati. And... Well, first of all, the things changed a little bit when he got to Cincinnati anyway. But his first year, he did hit 40 home runs, 118 RBIs. Then he had 22. Then he was hurt for the next 3 years. Well, so injuries kind of changed it all. So let's cancel that comparison. I'm looking at the games played. In 02, he played 70 games. In 03, he played 53 games and 83 games. He didn't get to come close to playing 150, 160 games.
Yeah, I know Reds fans, they always appreciate him coming back because Ken Griffey Sr., of course, was part of the big red machine.
Yeah.
But after that first year, poor Ken Griffey Jr. just basically couldn't stay on the field.
I was just trying to figure out at what age he started to drop down. But since the injury factor happened, it's not fair to put
you
it
You don't
on
have that with Miguel.
No.
I brought up the back thing because it's something I've read in passing at times during the last couple years. Obviously, he never went on the DL or anything for it. 119 games in 2015 was his lowest games played since his rookie year, which is only a half year. So, yeah, it's not a blatant injury that's causing this, although I wonder when you get that, 34 going on to 35, et cetera, if you're having little back issues now and again, that's going to flare up, one would think.
Hey, Kush, before the top of the hour here, you know how to spell Kaepernick without looking?
Kaepernick.
You are already a step ahead of Spike Lee, who saw because Jimmy Bar-
and I'm told Spike Lee, I hated the spelling bee stuff in school back in the day.
Jimmy told Spike Lee to do the right thing and shut up about Colin Kaepernick. I said yesterday I wanted to put the Kaepernick story to bed until today when somebody else made it news again.
Of course.
And indeed, it is Spike, who has tweeted out a kind of a photo call to not arms, that would be the to unity, I guess, to supporting Colin Kaepernick. Basically, they're holding a rally for Colin Kaepernick on August 23rd at the NFL headquarters in New York, outside the NFL headquarters in New York, right? And the picture says, United We Stand, rally for Colin Kaepernick, K-A-P-E-R-N-I-C-K. they can't even spell the name of the dude that they're there to support.
Let's put it
but
this
it
way.
Must be really, really personal for him.
And for me, I always could spell it correctly because whether it be callers or subjects, you know, when I type the description of our podcast after the show, I've not had to type his name so much I know where the E goes.
Well,
I've
typed his name so many times in tweets, that's how I knew him.
Right?
Obviously, Spike Knee, who's – and by the way, what is Colin Kaepernick first known for? What was the first thing he became known for that started all of his troubles? His refusal to do what?
The anthem thing.
To do what for the anthem?
Stand.
To stand. They're calling this rally for Colin Kaepernick at the NFL headquarters on August 23rd at 5 p.m. United we stand for Colin Kaepernick.
I don't know, at least go the whole sitting or kneeling route and sound clever. My God.
I'm going to stand for the dude who wouldn't stand, which started all of the troubles that he currently finds himself in.
At least try to be creative with it,
Spike.
Right? You do films, I thought. There's some creativity
gosh.
Come on, man.
I just find it very, very cute. And by cute, I mean laughable. Okay, here's what we got. We got Top of the Hour Sports Center coming. I got a ticket sweet deal coming up in the next hour, about a half an hour from now at about 4:30. And it does relate to the University of Toledo. So if you're a Rocket fan, you're going to like the sweet deal opportunity that we've got for you. Coming up after the top of the hour, though, Ryan Van Bibber, NFL editor at SBNation.com, takes us camping. We're going to talk about the Lions camp. We're going to talk about the Browns camp. We're going to talk about all of the other big NFL stories as we get ready for game number one for everybody that wasn't in the Hall of Fame game in the NFL preseason. So all of that coming up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bragg knows how to play. Very conscientious, works extremely hard. He's gained a lot of respect in the locker room because of the way he prepares. He did a good job today, and obviously it was his first opportunity with those guys, so we just need to keep fine-tuning some things. It's not over yet, but I'd love to see him go play well on Thursday night and lead the team and run our offense to the best of his ability. I was going to put everything into the equation, and I just felt like at this time, this was the best opportunity for us.
Coach sat down with all of us quarterbacks, talked to us all at the same time. He told all of us how the rotation was going to go Thursday night, and then we came out here and we had a great walkthrough. You know, my biggest deal, like I told you guys from the get-go, is just trying to be a consistent quarterback and get better every single day. You know, don't make the same mistake twice. The key is to make the most of whatever snaps you get, whether it's 5 plays, 15 plays, 25 plays, 50 plays. It's always making the most of that play. And when that play is done, put it behind you and make the most of the next play.
Come here to help and, you know, get back into football. We'll kind of see how it goes. A situation like this, I mean, just doesn't come along very often. I mean, I know Adam very well. I've known him since 06, the first year I came out. I know the system. You know, you're talking about a playoff team. Really, really good football players, a lot of potential. So there weren't a lot of opportunities or jobs out there. If they would have came up, I would have taken. This has got to be the top of the list.
I think it really was a struggle for him to come to this conclusion because, as I said, I think he was content having retired. Jay's not a legacy type of guy. That's just his personality. He's not a pleaser. He's not worried about what other people think about him, and he's not a legacy guy. I don't doubt his dedication to this endeavor. While I thought he was excited initially about this opportunity, then I think he thought about it and then realized that, you know, retirement's not so bad. He had made over $100 million. He'd had a number of injuries, and he said today, meeting the media, that his wife, Kristen, played a big role in that.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza. We roll onward now at 4:09. We got taking until 5 o'clock drive time with Mike Miller coming up. A lot of good stuff there in the montage. We're going to look a little bit at the Lions training camp. We'll talk a little bit about the Browns training camp. Brock Osweiler to start the first preseason game for the Browns. Obviously, we cover them the closest, but we are going to go all over the NFL, including to Miami. As you just heard a little bit of the introduction of Jay Cutler to the Miami media. And immediately, the moment he stood up, he became a meme for the social media haters who can't stand Jay Cutler. And it's so funny. I was one of those who can't stand Jay Cutler. I have criticized him on this show for the last 3 years. You know, that I watched him closely, and he's just such an uninspiring non-type of leader, a waste of extraordinarily great arm talent. For whatever reason, it just hasn't always panned out for him. But suddenly I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for this to work just because I want Miami to have been proven right in choosing him to come out of, well, he never really even entered the broadcast booth. But to come out of semi-retirement and on his way into the broadcast booth back to the field rather than Colin Kaepernick. So I really, suddenly for the first time, I find myself rooting for Jay Cutler. All right, a lot of NFL stories and notes to get to, so let's welcome our guest, Ryan Van Bibber. He is an NFL editor for the good folks at SBNation.com. Hey, Ryan, thanks for the time this afternoon. How the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Outstanding. You know, I love the start of football season. Nobody likes preseason games, but we like what they represent, which is a step closer to real games. And that's what we've, of course, all been waiting for. Hey, let's start, if we could, just with the biggest, you know, the elephant in the room, of course, and that is Jay Cutler, pulled back onto the playing field by his former coordinator, Adam Gase. He really has a great relationship. It seemed like a no-brainer that if Ryan Tannehill is going to be out for any significant period of time, and it looks like maybe it will be for the entire season from a precautionary standpoint, it just looks like a plug-and-play fit here for Jay Cutler in Miami. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the season plays out, but just on the surface of it, my initial reactions, I feel like Cutler's a better quarterback for what Gase is doing down there than Tannehill is. I mean, you remember Tannehill's the guy Gase inherited, not the guy he picked himself. So, you know, you got to kind of wonder about his long-term future. But I think, you know, we know Cutler likes to throw the ball well. We know that under Gase, we know that under Gase, he really cut down on the mistakes and the turnovers in particular. And, you know, that's something that, you know, they kind of turned Tannehill into a game manager last year and leaned more heavily on the run. They were the one of the top two or three teams in the NFL running when they were down year. So that just kind of how much faith they have in Tannehill. So I don't think you'll see that this year. I think you'll see Miami a little more aggressive in games with Cutler throwing the ball as long as they can give him protection in the pocket. And I think that it bodes well for the Dolphins this year. Probably not enough to knock the Patriots off the top, but it's enough that they can, you know, legitimately make a shot at 10 wins again this season.
So are you essentially saying, Ryan, that this was a blessing in disguise? Ryan Tannehill going down creates the potential for serious improvement for the Dolphins' offense.
It might. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, this is only a 1-year deal for Cutler, so maybe it's sort of a let's see what it's like, and then talk again later kind of thing. But I mean, you know, like I say, Tannehill's not Gase's quarterback. That's the guy he kind of inherited in Miami, and I don't think that. You know, he plays a style of football consistent to what we've seen Gase prefer to do with his offenses. Now, Gase over the years has done a really good job of kind of making something out of nothing. Obviously, he was he had Tebow for a little while and made some lemonade out of that lemon. So
right. That
was a positive there. But, I mean, I think that this is maybe a better situation in the short term for the Dolphins. However, I think with Cutler's age, you got to kind of, I mean, he's only 34 this year, so it's not terribly old in the era of 40-year-old quarterbacks. But, you know, you got to kind of think about if they don't have Tannehill, they don't really have a lot, you know, without him or Cutler on the roster. So they have to kind of think about, you know, the near-term future at least.
If Cutler plays well this season, and by well, I don't know. I mean, you know, let's say he has a similar season to what he had under Gase when he had his best year, and he throws for, you know, 20-some touchdowns and, let's say, less than 12 or 13 interceptions. And let's say they don't knock off the Patriots, because I don't think that's a fair thing to ask them to do. But they, you know, approach double-digit wins, win 9 or 10 games perhaps. And, you know, is it something they would think about? You know, hey, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and field some offers? We're going to roll for the next three in a 3-year deal for a Jay Cutler.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And you look at the cap ramifications. This is the last year where Tannehill's guaranteed money is all paid out. They could cut Tannehill next year and take, you know, a $4 million dead cap hit from that, which is, you know, relatively speaking, isn't a whole lot for a quarterback. So, you know, they could move on from Tannehill. They could trade him. I mean, Tannehill, the last three, or I think he signed through, the last three seasons of his contract after this year would be relatively team friendly if there was a team out there that thought that he could be sort of a gap starter for them, or maybe, you know, an upgrade over sort of the rotational situation they've got at quarterback at that point in time. And it's a relatively team friendly deal for a quarterback in an era where the cap goes up, you know, $10 to $12 million every year.
What was your reaction, Ryan? We're talking to Ryan Van Berber, NFL editor at SBNation.com. What was your reaction to the reaction of the Cutler signing vis-a-vis Colin Kaepernick? Everybody, you know, kind of has been waiting. What injury in what city is going to be the one that forces somebody to pull the trigger and say, okay, well we're going to have to bring in somebody with some starting experience? A lot of people felt like this was the place. But then you had, you know, the extenuating circumstances, the Castro support and the public comments, et cetera, and a, what is it, 34? We talked to somebody down in Miami yesterday. 34%, I think, Cuban-American population down there in South Florida, in Miami. And there was just some thoughts that would never work under any circumstances. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I'm sure that was an issue they probably kicked around when they talked about Kaepernick, but I think this situation, though, with Gase and Cutler being a free agent, that was really sort of where they wanted to go. I mean, you know, you bring in a guy that knows your offense, that you've worked with before, that you feel like you feel confident in what he can bring to the team. You don't have to kind of reinstall the offense for the quarterback in, you know, the early part of August when you've got, you know, a relatively short time until the season begins. So, I mean, I think Cutler was sort of a more ideal marriage for the situation in Miami than Kaepernick or anybody else would have been.
Cutler out of that, if you can, for me, Ryan. And let's say Cutler wasn't available. Or let's say he said, no, I really want to stay in the broadcast booth, which I don't think he ever did. He retired solely because he didn't have a team. Nobody wanted him any more than they apparently want Cutler or Kaepernick, in part because of his personality. But what if he said, no, I want to stay, I really want to start this broadcasting thing? Then is it Kaepernick, or did they go Orton? Or do they go Tebow? Or do they go, who else did they say yesterday, Jim, we talked about? Oh, Ponder, or somebody in that vein.
Well, I mean, Kaepernick is obviously, I think, to me, the most talented of that bunch. The problem is like you say, yeah, obviously there's the issue there. But, you know, you got to consider the thing that, besides the catcher thing, you've had the Dolphins owner Stephen Ross has, you know, been kind of the only owner that's really kind of come out in support of Kaepernick and you know, like to sort of, semi not really agree with what he's doing or what he's saying, but sort of like, you know, I support his right to do this, and I think,
right,
you know, he's got a positive message and we should listen and have this conversation, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, that was sort of an interesting circumstance in Miami with the owner being so supportive of that, because a lot of cases, I think you saw this is the way it played out in Baltimore, you know, the coach and the general manager were definitely interested in Colin Kaepernick, and the owner was not, and sort of, you know, pocket vetoed that move. So, you know, it would have been interesting to see where it goes. All reports right now indicate that they didn't really have a lot of good options to consider if Cutler had turned them down. I think the most logical thing may have been to start Matt Moore, maybe bring in Colin Kaepernick and kind of coach him up in that system and then see where things are after a few, you know, three or four games into the season.
I'm of the belief, and I read your column, by the way, on SB Nation about Kaepernick and about the hypocrisy that you think the Baltimore situation showed about the league. I'm of the belief that there is no owner who is going to be willing to bring that circus to town, and it will be a circus, for a backup quarterback, for a guy to just be my fail-safe when and if my starter goes down. It is in no way, shape, or form going to be worth that. If Colin Kaepernick was being brought to start, and that might mean Colin Kaepernick having to be a lot better than he is, because he was at his best before the league figured out how to defend the read option. And now they pretty much have, and he has got to be, like everybody else, a pocket passer, which is not his strongest thing. He's only going to be a starter in a case of dire necessity. I can't imagine anybody signing him and bringing all of that and everything that happened. You saw what happened even most recently with Ray Lewis hugging Steve Bisciotti, the picture that his girlfriend, the activist who kind of started all of him on all of this stuff last year, comparing that to a slave hugging a slave owner. Man, I don't care if you're Ross or if you're Jerry Jones. Nobody's going to want to bring that kind of divisive stuff to their locker room and to their city for a backup quarterback. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the number one reason why Colin Kaepernick's not signed to a roster at all, and I really don't think that he will be at this point. I mean, there's always the chance that you have a mid-season situation where,
yeah,
you know, a team like Seattle, I could see that. You know, I could see, you know, I don't know. It's hard to kind of think of some other ones that wouldn't necessarily fit that bill, but, you know, Seattle was an interesting spot, you know, and they kind of did that dance a little bit back in May with him.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you had a situation there where there was more
concern. Well, didn't Pete Carroll say what I just said too, Ryan? He said, this guy who's a starter in this league, he's not a guy that I would bring here to be a backup. And I think it's because I'm not bringing that mess, that crazy atmosphere, the backlash, the pros, the cons, the people who support him, the people who hate him. I'm not going to bring that here for a guy who's only going to be my backup. He's got to be a starter somewhere for anybody really to be wanting to deal with that. I kind of feel like
that's for sure. And I think you have another situation in Seattle where Russell Wilson doesn't necessarily have all the support in the locker room, and you have Michael Bennett, you know, and some of the other players that have said that, you know, have come out and said that Colin Kaepernick should be a starting quarterback, and then you bring in Colin Kaepernick, and right away you probably have a few players inside that locker room that are already in his corner to be the starting quarterback, set aside all the politics stuff. So, there's a couple situations like that, too, where there's some, you know, they're not going to bring in the controversy. I mean, you look at Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a team now. We still don't know what's going on with Andrew Luck.
Right.
They're a team that could, you know, obviously probably needs to start thinking about another answer to start the season than what they have on the roster. But, that's not a place where you're going to see Colin Kaepernick land.
No. There's probably 20 NFL cities, I would imagine, that are just crossed off the list right out of the gate, because there is a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of, you know, Midwestern flyer of America who really like police officers and who believe they are there to serve and protect and who don't see them as slave patrol catchers and pigs on socks and that sort of thing. That would never play in probably 20 or maybe 22 or three cities. And that leaves very few options for Colin Kaepernick if he's going to bring that kind of divisive story or baggage with him. Let's get away from that. Get to another quarterback. Let's talk about Tom Brady. Big controversy over the last couple of days. He says, I just love playing this because it's just fun to play back to back. Tom Brady, I just love this. What about the concussion, the report that you had a concussion last year?
I really don't think that's anybody's business.
Bob Lee?
The hell it isn't, Tom.
I just love playing those back to back. Bob Lee says the hell it isn't. Does Tom Brady owe anybody a medical report on his brain and his condition, especially when we're not even talking about something that he has now that could impact his ability to start game one? But does he owe anybody any backdrop of what he has done in years past as far as what injuries he has suffered?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, the only injury that a player has to, you know, that a player is responsible to talk about is the ones that they're required to disclose on the weekly injury report once the season starts. And I think that he is well, like it or not, I think he's well within his right to wave reporters off that question. It's his business. It's his thing to talk about. And this is, you know, there's no excuse for players not knowing the danger that comes with playing football at this point. We know enough about it that we know that risk is there. And these guys have to make up their minds on their own whether they're gonna pursue this as a career or not. And, you know, they can talk to their families and their parents and children about that. But it's a personal decision that they have to make. And if the guy wants to talk about it in public, that's his choice. But I think we certainly have to respect his decision in that case.
Yeah, I would agree. The only question that some people brought up, like Mike and Mike, of course, we carry ESPN Radio, so Mike and Mike is on our air every morning. And he brought up yesterday, what about, and it's a question, only a question, I think Greenberg handled it fairly enough. Does Tom Brady owe an obligation, though, to younger players as the message continues to be spread by young coaches, USA Football, and so on and so forth? Don't ever hide an injury, especially a head injury. If you get dizzy, if you get confused, if you start to see gray, all of those types of things, we want you to tell us immediately. Does Tom Brady owe it as the face of the league, as the greatest quarterback all time, owe it to all of them to set the example and say, yes, I'll tell you if I had a head injury or not, because that's what everybody should do?
Yeah, I mean, there's a case to be made for that. I mean, I think that's an issue the league and the union really have to shoulder the most of the responsibility for that, that they have a responsibility to educate, because it's, you know, ultimately their business model that they have to educate people about this to protect it so that, you know, that people do continue to play football and people do continue to come up the ranks and play in the NFL and people do continue to watch the sport and participate and be fans and things like that at all the different levels of the game. So, I mean, I think he does have some of that responsibility, but to me, it's really more on the league and the union to come out and push that message more so than the individual players like that.
Ryan Van Bibber is our guest, NFL editor at SBNation.com. Okay, let me get a little local on you here. Fans of Northwest Ohio, they follow the Lions and they follow the Browns. Probably more the former than the latter, but I want to get your thoughts on both of them. And I want to start with the Browns only because they made the more newsworthy move yesterday, announcing Brock Osweiler, not Cody Kessler, who was on the team last year, and not first-round draft pick DeShone Kizer. They made Brock Osweiler the starter for game 1 of the preseason. Does that surprise you? And who do you think will be the starter for game 1 of the regular season out there in Cleveland?
The Osweiler, I think, did surprise me a little bit. And I was talking to a few other people, and, you know, we sort of, without ever having confirmed this, kind of wonder if this isn't a signal that they're willing to trade Osweiler, and maybe this is a chance to shop him around and show scouts and general managers elsewhere around the league that, hey, if you need a veteran quarterback, then, hey, we might have the guy that you're looking for here. Because I feel like Kessler, I know he hasn't had the best camp if you read their daily reports from it, but I feel like he showed enough last year that he, you know, that the Browns could be comfortable, you know, understanding that he's probably not, a piece of the Super Bowl puzzle per se, but, you know, that they could be comfortable going with Kessler and DeShone Kizer in some combination of 1 and 2 to start the season. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense for them to hold on to Osweiler. They got the draft pick they wanted for it. They did that, you know, the classic sort of NBA move of taking away Houston's cap problem for them in exchange for that pick. So they're free to do that now, and I wouldn't be surprised if they at least try to do that. I don't know a lot of teams will be lining up to trade for Osweiler. I still think you're probably looking at Kessler, the starter, week 1 in Cleveland. I know there's we still have 4 preseason games left to play, and sure, that could change between now and then, but I think that, you know, given where they are, that maybe this is just sort of, you know, unless Kizer comes in and just really blows things away, if all things are equal come week 1, I think that Hugh Jackson would probably still stick with Kessler to start the season. But I would not be surprised to see Kizer in there by October, or even, you know, November at the latest.
What's your read on DeShone Kizer? Do you think he's got the goods to be a star, or at least a starter and a solid one in this league? You may or may not know he's a Toledo native, a Central Catholic High School star, then, of course, on to Notre Dame before going to the Browns. So he's got a major fan base here in Northwest Ohio. What's your read on him?
I said this going back to the draft this spring. I mean, I really think he's a really, you know, maybe one of the most naturally talented quarterback prospects that came out this year. I think he just sort of needs that. You know, he's not quite as polished as you know, Mahomes or even Trubisky were coming into the out of college and into the league. So I think he needs time getting seasoned and accustomed to that a little bit. I mean, it's you know, the Browns take a lot of crap, but there's a, you know, it's a much better situation for a young quarterback there than it has been for a few years. They have some talent on offense. They have a decent offensive line. So I think that you know, if you can sort of get him up to speed, or at least design an offense that sort of, you know, works within the limitations of where he's at in learning the speed and the nuances of the NFL game, that you can make progress with him.
It was a humiliating year for Hugh Jackson last year in his first year as the Browns head coach. He has vowed that will never happen again, and I don't think anybody thinks it will. To the tune of a single win, but do you think? I mean, how much better does it get for them this year, considering the division they're in? Looking at that schedule, are we looking at 2 wins? Are we looking at 5 wins? Are we looking at pushing toward 500 in their second year under Hugh Jackson? What are your thoughts?
I think they can get to 500. I mean, you know, it's not an easy 8-8 route they have, but I mean, it's a much better team than it was last year. They've upgraded parts. I mean, I think the thing that maybe would temper the enthusiasm a little bit is that it's a relatively young group of players. So you've got to kind of keep that in mind, so that, you know, kind of going back to what we just talked about with Kizer, is like, even though the talent is there, the experience isn't quite there yet, and that's going to kind of hold them back as some of these younger players start to kind of get a feel for the ropes in the NFL. But I mean, I feel like the arrow's definitely pointing upward, and I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, somewhere between 6 and 8 wins for them.
Okay, that's a little ambitious for me. I'm kind of thinking 5-11 for now, but there you can make an argument for what you just did. Let's go to our Lions fans now and start talking about what's going on there. First of all, Matt Stafford, do you think his contract status will become a pain in the rear end as they get into the season? You know, he doesn't have to sign one before the season starts. They can continue to negotiate. All signs indicate to him pointing, or excuse me, all signs point to him signing the richest contract in league history, passing what Derek Carr just got from the Raiders. Do you see that happening soon, and do you think it's an issue for them that could be a problem?
I don't think it's an issue if it doesn't happen soon. I mean, you see guys work out contract extensions all the time when it comes to, the spring and before free agency starts and before the team has to get to the point of, where they're going to apply the franchise tag. So, there's every reason to think that this deal is going to get done. And if it doesn't get done before the season starts, I certainly think we're going to see it before March, 10th or 11th when, the whistle kind of blows to open free agency next year. So, one way or another, I wouldn't rush it. I wouldn't panic. I mean, if the Lions feel, they need to get it done ahead of that time, ahead of next March, because they'll have other things that they have to deal with the cap and signing other players and free agents and things like that. So it just kind of depends on, where the front office feels they need to be on this to start taking care of the rest of the roster and the cap management angle here.
Last year was a major problem for the Lions offense. They just did not have a running game. Amir Abdullah missed virtually the entire season. Theo Riddick caught the ball a few times out of the backfield. They got a little bit of a late season burst, but just not much. He's supposed to be healthy now. How important is that running game? And also finding, the right complement of targets for Matthew Stafford. You got one of the better arms and one of the better productive passers in the league, probably maybe not top 5 or top 8, but certainly top 10 or 12, I would guess. And you can address that too. But he needs weapons, and he needs Abdullah to have a big year out of the backfield.
Yeah, the thing I like about the Lions offense this year is their line. I mean, I thought that was a really good move to bring in TJ Lang. I thought that, I'm not a huge fan of Greg Robinson at left tackle, but I think that the middle of the, they have, they have enough depth with that unit that they can kind of move parts around to get the best combination that they need, and that will help, obviously. I think the middle part of the line is probably the strongest part, and that helps the running game right there. So, the combination, everyone last year worried about what they would look like without, Megatron in the lineup, and they did all right with Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. So I think that's a really good comp. Tate's really one of the more underrated receivers in the league. I don't think he gets quite enough credit for as good as he is. But I think the real progress you're going to see with the Lions is on defense. I think that they're a little bit better if they can stay healthy this year. You get Onslaught back up off the pup list and on the field and ready to play to start the season, and they'll be in much better shape.
We're talking to Ryan Van Bibber about the NFL training camps, preseason game number one coming up for the Lions. We talked about the Browns. Hey, Ryan, our man Jim Cushlin here has got one for you, too. Jimmy, go ahead.
A subject that hasn't been covered as much in the last couple days, I think, in the NFL with what just happened in Miami with Cutler and then Brady v. Bob Lee and some other things. But Bob, just for the record, I kind of went into this a little bit on Friday when I was in for you. Ryan, do you make of what Le'Veon Bell is doing in Pittsburgh? Basically saying, I'm not going to show up to training camp, until I kind of feel like it, because I don't really need it. I think it's a terrible precedent to be setting. When do you think he'll actually finally show up there, and will he suffer any consequences from Mike Tomlin and the Steelers for this?
Yeah, it's hard to say because, obviously there are the fines that he's going to incur for missing this. He wants a new deal. He still hasn't signed the tag yet. So, technically he can't show up at camp until he does sign that. We've seen players do this in the past. In similar situations, they kind of use this as an excuse to skip camp. And obviously I don't know that, the reps that Bell would get in camp are going to be any different in terms of, how he's going to play out this, how he'll perform this season. But, it's a bad look for the rest of the team. The guy needs to be there. You need to be there to take the reps, even if you have a few more veteran days off. You just kind of need to be there for your team and to kind of get used to that. That offense runs through Le'Veon Bell. They don't have, the D'Angelo Williams backup situation that they had in the past that kind of helped them get through, his various suspensions over the last couple years. So, if I were Le'Veon Bell, I would sign the tag. You take the guaranteed money and you show up and get to camp to do that. And then hopefully, you show enough on the field that the good faith with the team, you can work out a deal in the offseason. And if not, you go to free agency and you cash in.
Let me throw one more wrinkle into that part of the story. Le'Veon Bell might be the best all-around back in the National Football League. Running the ball, catching the ball, he's perfect for that Steelers offensive line. He knows how to pick and find the holes in the creases and all that stuff. But what he doesn't know how to do is stay on the field for 16 games. He has been injured at least a little bit. In addition to the suspension, he has been injured at some of the most crucial times for the Steelers. Any argument to or any merit to the argument that maybe, you know, saving himself a little bit by not busting it all out during training camp and during preseason games, not that he's going to carry it 100 times anyway in preseason, but that maybe, you know, getting a little bit of a fresh start, you know, closer to the start of the season is better for a guy who's been injury prone.
No, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I think that there's something to, you know, veteran guys that just, you know, he just doesn't need the reps like some of the younger players do or like, you know, the quarterback and his wide receivers do. But it's, you know, I think for just sort of the overall presence of the team, at some point he's got to start thinking about, you know, when he's going to show up there. And maybe that's after the training camp period kind of dies down and they get into that second half of the preseason, you know, he decides that that's the time to show up. But he doesn't have a lot of ground. I mean, it's hard. He obviously has the talent, but, you know, he's not so talented that it's not, you know, impossible to replace him. You know, you look at the draft this year, it was filled with running backs who are sort of similar to Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, he's getting $12 million guaranteed if he signs the tag this year. He's not going to get $12 million on the open market per year on average as a running back. There's just running backs just don't sign those kind of deals anymore.
Right. No, you're right about that. No question. Last thing, going back to our Lions, win total or at least a place of finish in the NFC North, is it the Packers division to win?
It still is the Packers division to win in my mind. I'm not a huge Mike McCarthy fan. I think that they're so consistently underwhelming considering that they have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and he's really sort of a, you know, to me, head and shoulders, the best player in the league right now. But they should be much better than they are. They should be a more of a legitimate Super Bowl threat than they are. But I think that the division is still theirs to lose, although I'm anxious to kind of see how the Vikings look coming out of the gate this year.
Yeah, that will be very interesting indeed. They could be the X factor, really, that decides what happens in that division. It should be very competitive. Ryan Van Bibber, NFL editor for SB Nation. Ryan, really great conversation. Enjoyed it every step of the way. Thanks so much for the time, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me today, guys.
You got it. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan Bibber. All right. I've been promising you, and I told you it would come near the bottom of the hour, and we've passed the bottom of the hour, so it is time for our ticket sweet deal of the week. If you would like to, tomorrow morning, you get yourself online at 1065theticket.com, and you'll have a chance to win the sweet deal of the week for a spectacular savings. And I'm talking about the University of Toledo sweet deal package that features four tickets to the season opener at the Glass Bowl against Elon on August 31st. Four autographed posters of head coach Jason Candle and a Coach Candle bobblehead. Just log on tomorrow morning, as I mentioned, to 1065theticket.com, and you can get this sweet deal package worth $112 for just $50. That's right, tomorrow morning while supplies last. Or you can get it all for free right now. Be caller number 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, and we will hook you up with this fabulous UT sweet deal. And we're right back after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, congratulations to Kelly Connolly of Toledo, who won the UT sweet deal package. So you're going to the home opener and season opener on August 31st at the Glass Bowl. So congratulations, as well as the posters and the bobblehead of Coach Candle. Okay, I want to go back to something I started the show with, Kush, because I find it fascinating as we get, you know, we really have not talked a ton about college football here as NFL training camps are in full swing.
Right,
and
okay.
All of that stuff. But, of course, they're working hard in Columbus. They're working hard in Ann Arbor. They're working hard in East Lansing. They're working hard at Bowling Green. And they're working hard at Toledo as well. So I want to kind of you know, start to increase the discussion of college football issues as well. And this one is just fascinating to me, whether it's in season or not. Josh Rosen is the UCLA starting quarterback. He is an All-American candidate. He is certainly a first-round draft pick. In fact, I think he's rated number 7 on the big board for the 2018 draft by Mel Kiper Jr., for what that's worth. Number 7 overall. Not 7th quarterback, 7th overall. So, this is a big-time player with a big-time voice and a big-time, you know, spotlight. He's at UCLA, for crying out loud. He has discussed the academic challenges now involved with being a college football player in a wide-ranging interview with Bleacher Report. Okay? What Josh Rosen says is that, bottom line, quote, football and school don't go together, end quote. He said it's just not right. It's wrong. He said, quote, football and school don't go together. They just don't. Trying to do both is like trying to do two full-time jobs. There are guys who have no business being in school, but they're here because this is the path to the NFL. There is no other way. Now, this is a smart dude. Josh Rosen is an economics major. He's entering his junior year at UCLA, and he's focused on the big business of college football. As an econ major, it seems to kind of work for him, right? He said there's massive money in college football, but, quote, there's no money being made by the players. He said there's so much money being made in the sport, but not by the players. And because of what they're asking these players to do as they make money off of them, such as go to school, it's not fair to either side. The football side, which has time taken away from it, as these guys are on scholarship because they have to go to classes, and the class side, which has time taken away from studying because they have to go to football. Meetings, weight room, film sessions, practice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said, quote, any time, let me back up for a second. No one in their right mind, he said, should have a football player's schedule and go to school. It's not that some players shouldn't be in school. It's just that universities should help them more instead of just finding ways to keep them eligible. That was kind of a theme in this big interview with the Bleacher Report from Josh Rosen, that the school, the team, the program, they do provide tutors, they do provide study tables and other aids to help these guys, but just to the point where, okay, you're eligible, get to practice. But I got a D on this test. A D isn't an F. You're eligible. Get to practice. But I really want to learn this stuff because I want to get a degree and actually have something to show for my time here. I want an A in this. Can we spend some more time studying? You're eligible now. Get your ass to practice. And I've talked to enough Division I players to know that this is pretty much common. Josh Rosen is not wrong here. He went on to say, any time that a player puts into school will just take away from the time that they could put into football. They don't realize that they're getting screwed until it's too late. He said you have a bunch of people at the universities who are supposed to help you out, but they're more interested in helping you stay eligible. There's just so much money being made in this sport. It's a crime to not do everything you can to help the people who are making it for those who are spending it. Rosen's first two seasons at UCLA have been defined as much by his proclivity, ESPN's word there, but I love it, for creating headlines away from the field as what he did on the field. And on the field, all he did was throw for 5,500 yards in those 2 years and 33 touchdowns. That's a lot. There was a viral photo that showed him in a hot tub that he brought into his dorm room. So obviously he's not hurting for money. He got a hot tub. But then another photo that he posted disparaging then presidential candidate Donald Trump while playing golf. But that's not what he's most known for. He's most known for his comments about the players not making enough money. And by enough, that's my word. I threw that in there because they already do make money. That scholarship does have an extraordinary value, somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000 for a four-year scholarship, full ride. And I'm talking the full boat. From the classes, to the books, to the room, to the board, to the clothing, to the meals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of the things included. You're talking about $200,000, roughly, depending on the school. But that's not enough. Josh Rosen, when UCLA last year announced its 15-year, $280 million deal with Under Armour to outfit the Bruins, Rosen used that contract to mock the NCAA's nonprofit status. And I do have to say he's got a point. He's got a point. He went on social media and said, posting a link to the 15-year, $280 million deal, he said, we're still amateurs, though. Gotta love nonprofits. Hashtag NCAA. That was on Instagram. But Rosen didn't stop there. He didn't stop just talking about school and about how impossible it is for players to truly dedicate themselves to football if they have to go to school, or to truly dedicate themselves to school if they plan to play football. He said they just don't go together. He made a point of calling out one particular university. As we talked about in the first half hour of the show, if you missed it, he called out Nick Saban and Bama, the school that has won four of the last eight national championships. He suggested that Alabama wouldn't be as successful if they actually had students in their program who could read. Now, I am paraphrasing. That was my word. Those were my words, not Josh Rosen's. But as you can see, as I give you his direct quote, I'm not far off. He said specifically, then there's the other side. Well, let me go back. He said, football and school don't go together. They just don't. Trying to do both is like trying to do two full-time jobs. There are guys who have no business being in school, but they're here because this is the path to the NFL. There's no other way. Now we get to the meat. Then there's the other side that says, raise the SAT eligibility requirements. Okay, raise the SAT requirement at Alabama and see what kind of team they have. You lose athletes, and then the product on the field suffers, end quote. Wow. Wham with the right hand. That is a beatdown of epic proportions by Josh Rosen. And I don't know if they're, I'm going to assume Alabama's not on their schedule. But if they were to meet in the playoffs, holy cow, bulletin board material does not even begin to describe that. Hey, Bama, let's see how many games you win if they raise the SAT eligibility requirements. That's like shouting from one end of the country out on the left coast down into the deep south of Alabama, you can't read. If they made you guys prove you could read, you guys wouldn't have anywhere near the athletes that you have. I'm interested in your reaction to this story. Kush, and you can go ahead and do this here because I don't know how much time we have left for calls, but at 866-240-1065, we might be able to squeeze you in. What do you think about Josh Rosen essentially saying school and football cannot go together? They should not be required of one another. Jim?
Now, this is obviously something that, you know, these things have been a long time coming in a way. We've heard sure. all the comments.
Yeah, we've heard people nibbling around the edges of that for a while.
And, you know, I've had parts of my position on some of these things change. Example, remember a couple years back before Urban Meyer, all the quote-unquote trouble some of those Buckeyes got into?
Yeah?
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that's peanuts and shouldn't have mattered at all, especially
when
we're talking in these contexts.
No, I'm sorry. That mattered big, Jim. That mattered big. You had guys taking essentially thousands of dollars worth of merchandise while faking their eligibility and faking their, you know, their work status, you know, working at one of this alums used car dealerships where they never had to go. And then they're trading in their gold pants, which is supposed to mean something, for thousands of dollars worth of goods. And yes, tattoos, among other things, are worth thousands of dollars. If you ever, you know, go get a small tattoo, it's going to cost you $150 at a decent place. Go get some of the big sleeves that those guys are getting. You're talking thousands of dollars. It does have value. I think people laughed at quote-unquote tattoo gate. But I got to tell you, I took it a lot more seriously because that's a real item of value in the real world today.
No, and I'm not disagreeing that there's not real value in some of those things that were involved in that particular case. I'm not suggesting that at all. It's what I'm suggesting is that, you know, down the line, a hindsight 2020, I can totally see why these guys do things like this. And these types of stories pop up, you know, not a year goes by where you don't hear some school, some story similar to that involving
That's
players.
True.
And this is why they're doing it. And I'm still not fully in favor of actually paying them an actual like kind of salary, like on a almost professional level.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. This isn't just a story about paying them. That's part of what he has complained about in the past. Right now, he's complaining about the schedule that they have to keep. How am I supposed to carry 15 credit hours and two labs, just as an example of a somewhat typical schedule? How am I supposed to carry that, and then along with the homework that comes with it, a certain number of papers per semester, a certain number of projects, blah, 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 plus regular reading and homework and so on and so forth, and put in the required number of hours in a calendar, you know, in a day, in a 24-hour cycle. I've got to go to this many classes, this much homework, blah, blah, and I've got to be in the film room, the weight room, practice field, meeting room, training table, et cetera, et cetera. How can we fit both of those? Even if they got paid, Kush, you know, Rosen would have a point of saying, it doesn't mean that I'm any more able to make it to, you know, make it to all of these things that now, with a paycheck in my hand than I would be otherwise.
Now, obviously, it's a full schedule. You know, there's nobody that's going to argue with that. However, the cynical side of me wants to come back and say, well, okay, well, how many of you are taking real classes and how many of you are pulling the Matt Leinart, I'm going to stay an extra year of eligibility by only taking ballroom dancing or whatever the heck it was?
Right.
You know, that's almost an individual, you know, kind of basis. There was a story we mentioned here on these airways a couple weeks ago, I think it was, somebody retiring from football because of the concussion stuff, but what was he going to do? He's going to go to MIT because he's going to get like some kind of doctorate
right.
in math
that's
or
correct.
Something
yeah.
like that. Now, those would obviously be time-consuming, you know, really tough classes, but how many times have we heard a lot of the biggest name players, they're taking, I'm sorry, what amounts to joke classes?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can do that. I don't know if that's fair, because it's not about just the biggest name players, and I think that's the mistake
that
a lot of people make, because the vast majority of players who play big-time college football, as you know, are not starters.
True.
There's 85 scholarships. There's
Very
only
true.
22 starters.
Yep.
Okay? Which means an even larger majority of them are not going to the NFL because, you know, on a given team, you may have one or two out of 22 starters in a senior class. In fact, that number is even reduced because you don't have all seniors starting.
That's true. And it's not the olden days anymore.
In a given year, if you have one or two guys go to the National Football League on your entire 85-man scholarship roster, you're doing very well. So, in other words, a huger majority of these guys, a major majority of these players, are not going to the National Football League. So these classes that they're taking do matter. And most of them recognize that, or I shouldn't say most, many of them recognize they're not going to the show. And they've got to take real classes, and they've got to get real grades. And they can't just be told, like Josh Rosen is saying, hey, my only job here as a study aide, as a tutor or whatever, is to keep you eligible. As long as you got your D, shut up and get to the practice field. These guys are like, hey, I need the degree, because I'm probably not going to be, as I'm the third string tackle on this team, I'm probably not going to be on the draft board 3 years from now, you know, a sophomore might say. So that's the problem here. And I think Rosen makes a very, very good point that even if there were money involved, these guys just don't have the time to commit to both school and football, and I don't know what the solution is other than changing the entire calendar for players.
It's going to be a tough one, and it's going to be something that's going to take a lot of time and weird ideas probably before it's all sorted out. And I'm not sure what the answer is really either.
Well, to me, the answer is going to be what I kind of just mentioned in passing, and that is, changing the calendar.
Might be.
Allow these kids to take most of their courses in the summer. Don't
the spring and summer sessions, not during the football season.
Don't require them to have, you know, the same amount of credit hours in the fall as a regular student does.
You might be onto something there.
Let them take 4 or 5 instead of 15. Let them do a lot of work in the summer so that they can actually have fall to focus on the football.
I'll give you credit for that. That's a definite possibility. That's an intriguing one.
Just thinking out loud. I mean, literally, I didn't plan that. Just thinking out loud. Okay, we're out of time. We'll think out loud more tomorrow starting at 3 o'clock. Coming up next, the very loud Mr. Mike Miller. I'm teasing. I'm just trying to make a play on words. Mr. Mike Miller has got your drive time coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.